Hey guys, welcome to the podcast. You're listening to Ag Talk with the Ag Doc. I'm your host, Dr. Curtis Livesey. And before we begin today, I want to again take a moment to thank our very first sponsor, AgFuse. AgFuse was created to provide farmers and the farming community with an easy and intuitive social media platform, and they did just that. You can now connect with Dynamite Ag at agfuse.com. Now, here's a rundown of today's episode. In today's episode, I give you a quick update on the podcast, and then we go all the way back to 1984 to discuss some research from Israel on the effect of potassium on iron deficiency chlorosis in high pH soils. All right, let's do this.
You're listening to Ag Talk with the Ag Doc, presented by Dynamite Ag. Now, here's your host, Dr. Curtis Livesey.
Welcome to another episode of Ag Talk with the Ag Doc. As you're probably aware, this is our second episode with my new and hopefully improved show format, in which I do a critical, in-depth analysis of some scientific research study. But before we jump into that today, I want to give you a quick news update. I'm in the process of moving the podcast hosting over to Libsyn from Blog Talk Radio, and the short version of that story is that I can basically spend less money to host it there, and I have an improved podcast website, and apparently at the same time, I can even create a podcast app that you can download for free as a new and improved way to subscribe to the podcast. So anyway, keep listening in and just know that in the next couple of episodes, I'll have details as to how it is that you'll be able to find the new podcast location in iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you're listening to it currently, and also how you can get the new app so that you can subscribe. Secondly, and finally, before we get into the meat and potatoes of today's episode, I will be down at the 2016 Commodity Classic in New Orleans this week, so if you're going to be around, please be sure to look us up. All right, that's enough news. Today's research study is called The Effect of Potassium on Iron Chlorosis in Calcareous Soils, and I'm so excited to discuss that research right after this. Hey guys, you need to go check out AgFuse. AgFuse is a free social media tool created specifically to connect farmers and the agricultural community with one another. Through AgFuse, farmers can interact, share ideas, tips, research, and more. Users can form or join groups, allowing for the discussion of specific topics like precision technology or cover crops. The tool set provided by AgFuse allows farmers to increase knowledge in the field, update members, and provide instant news through groups. Learn more by visiting agfuse.com. That's AGFUSE.com. And when you get there, be sure to send us a friend request. So today's research study is called The Effect of Potassium on Iron Chlorosis in Calcareous Soils, and it was published in the Journal of Plant Nutrition back in 1984. If you're wondering why on earth I'm bringing up research from around the time I was born, it's because this particular study falls within a larger body of literature I've been reading lately on potassium, and this study just really struck me as interesting. So the chances are good that I'm going to do a little mini-series here on potassium in the next few episodes, so just brace yourself. Now, just like last week, as we noted in the beginning of that episode, every research study starts with a literature review, and again, that's just an argument for why the current research study that you're reading actually matters, or why that research should have been conducted in the first place. So it's the rationale, and the rationale for this study goes something like this. Iron deficiencies occur in calcareous or high pH soils, at least in part due to the low solubility of iron at those high pH levels. And as with any nutrient deficiency, an iron deficiency can obviously cause dramatic yield loss. So the two primary ways that producers have historically tried to deal with this are, number one, applying iron to the soil, oftentimes in a chelated form, or number two, applying chelated iron through a foliar application. Now, the next part of this argument is really beyond fascinating to me. Apparently, sometime in the last 100 years, plant physiologists discovered that plant growth can affect the pH of the nutrient solutions in which those plants are growing. Now, this part's really super important, so pay close attention here. What they are discussing here is not the pH of the fertilizer itself. Okay, you can have a neutral pH fertilizer that you're using, and that's actually different from the physiological pH that these researchers are discussing. So the researchers go on to explain that ammonium and potassium are physiologically acid salts, while calcium and magnesium are physiologically neutral, and nitrates are physiologically alkaline. At this point, you may be able to see where this is all going, and that's good, because that's the whole point of this rationale section, which is to make a logical argument. But just in case you're not quite connecting the dots yet, here's the short version. The researchers are making an argument that if potassium is physiologically acidic, and again, I want to emphasize that that is not the pH of the fertilizer itself, but it's more about the impact that it has on the nutrient solution in the root zone. So if potassium is physiologically acidic, then maybe they could use it to induce a decrease in the pH of the nutrient solution in the rhizosphere, or again in the root zone, just enough that it could unlock some of the nutrients, including iron, that are locked up there right now because of the high pH. So the researchers decided to test various forms of potassium to see what impact, if any, they might have on iron chlorosis. So they used potassium chloride against potassium sulfate against bicarbonate. And I don't know about you, but at this point, I was pretty much hooked. And some of you out there are like, at this point, I'm pretty much bored. So just bear with me, okay? I may admittedly be the biggest nerd in the world, but anyway, I'm sitting there reading this article, and it seriously was like watching a whodunit crime drama, and I was just totally enthralled with this research. Anyway, moving on. The next section of any research study is the methods, and in this section, they describe what they did. And remember that the goal of the methods section is that the researchers provide enough information that other researchers could theoretically go out and replicate this exact same study if they ever wanted to. So the crop they were looking at in this study was peanuts, and they were on a very interesting soil type called a mountain renzina, which is a humus-rich intrazonal soil that usually has a lot of rocks. It's often calcareous or high pH in nature. It's not a super common soil type. It occurs up in the Yukon and also over in Israel, obviously, which is where this study took place. But anyway, the soil had a light clay texture with a CEC of about 18. The calcium carbonate base saturation was 63%, while the potassium base sat was 1.3%. And the iron level was very low at 1.1 parts per million, according to the DTPA extraction method. And then at this point, things get a little crazy because of all the experimentation they did. Specifically, they had three trials. The first was just the straight-up soil discussed previously. The second was a one-to-one mix of soil and a quartz sand mix. And the third was a one-to-one mix of the soil and the quartz sand mixture that was then leached with excess irrigation water 10 days after planting. And then on top of that, they had three potassium treatments, a low, medium, and high rate. And they did that for both potassium sulfate and for potassium chloride. Again, a low, medium, and high potassium sulfate, and a low, medium, high potassium chloride. Additionally, the researchers ran an interesting test by using EDDHA chelated iron to act as a check against the effectiveness of the potassium sources in terms of how well they mitigate the iron deficiency chlorosis. And then after 45 days, they harvested the plants and they measured the chlorophyll content in the leaves. Now for the results. Iron deficiency chlorosis began to appear in the leaves at 14 days after planting, and the chlorosis became increasingly severe with each new leaf up until the eighth leaf, which was completely yellow. Now, in all of the pots that the researchers treated with the EDDHA chelated iron, there was no iron deficiency chlorosis, so it was obviously effective in mitigating the effects of iron deficiency. But remember, this study was about potassium and what impact it can have on IDC. And so again, that's why they ran the iron, because that was sort of the base level to see what the potassium could do compared to how well the chelated iron would help to mitigate the iron deficiency. So anyway, what they found regarding the effects of potassium was that the plants that were treated with potassium were on average somewhere in between the untreated plants and those that were treated with the chelated iron. And this obviously suggests that potassium can impact reduce the effects of IDC. However, not all potassium sources were equal in their effectiveness. More specifically, in the pot that contained 100% soil, as opposed to the soil with the quartz sand mixture, In that 100% soil mixture, even the highest rate of potassium chloride showed no anti-chlorosis effect. But potassium sulfate significantly decreased the chlorosis associated with iron deficiency at all levels, low, medium, and high. And in the sand-to-soil mixture condition, again, even the smallest application of the K2SO4 had a significantly better effect on the iron deficiency chlorosis than potassium chloride did. However, at the highest level of application of the potassium chloride, the significant difference between the two sources of potassium actually disappeared. Finally, in the soil and sand that was leached condition, a similar finding emerged. Potassium significantly impacted chlorosis, but again, the difference between potassium chloride and potassium sulfate was eliminated by leaching out the soil. Now we move on to the conclusions. So the researchers speculated that the sulfate in the potassium sulfate probably caused greater acidity in the root zone than did the potassium chloride, which could have subsequently unlocked more iron, and that would explain why the potassium sulfate was generally more effective than the potassium chloride at reducing iron deficiency chlorosis. And they concluded that potassium shows some promise in terms of being able to reduce IDC in some circumstances, and that it actually could be a way less expensive alternative to applying iron chelates, which are, again, admittedly very expensive. Now, critical analysis time. This is the fun part. First and foremost, guys, I have to say that I sincerely appreciate any study in which the researchers challenge the status quo, and this study does just that. Although, again, this was done almost 30 years ago. Think about the common source of potassium that we use today. Everybody's using 0060, and there's really almost no thought about using anything else. So I dug up this research specifically because, again, it does kind of challenge the status quo, hopefully, or at least it makes you think. You know, the researchers here gave a really fair and thorough treatment of the issues, and they did an excellent job explaining their results in terms of the impact of the different forms of potassium and the interaction that they had with the different soil conditions. And these researchers never overstated their claims. You know, it wasn't like they were saying, hey, go out and put potassium sulfate on every acre. They were simply saying, hey, here's what we found, and, you know, look at this, basically. So, you know, they don't overstate their claims, but they did conduct a compelling scientific study, and to me, they offered thought-provoking insight. And again, I just want to reiterate that, again, a study from 30 years ago is still really a breath of fresh air compared to so much information that comes out of the universities today, where professors or extension specialists simply tell growers that nothing new works and to basically keep doing what they're doing. You know, the problem with that is, I've heard Kip say on multiple occasions, if all it took to grow 300 bushel corn and 100 bushel soybeans was more N, P, and K, everybody would have done that already, because we've all been pouring the N, P, and K to it, and we're not getting where we want to go. So again, this is hopefully something that's going to make you think a little bit here. You know, the final part of the new podcast format to me is the most important, and that's where I get to discuss the real-world implications for your farming operation, and I think you probably see where I'm going here. Now, I highly doubt that if you're listening to this podcast that you're raising peanuts on a high pH Renzina soil in Israel. You might, however, be struggling with IDC on your soybeans in North Dakota, Minnesota, or parts of Alabama where you have high pH issues. If that's you, I'd encourage you to consider running some tests. No, don't go do your whole farm. But I think that this study provides enough evidence that it might be worth at least getting your hands on some potassium sulfate to try it if you're in one of these high pH situations. And just see, hey, if you run some strips on your own, maybe you can reduce the IDC on your own farm. And what about if you're not in a high pH soil? And what if you don't have any issues with iron chlorosis? Well, I'd still encourage you to get your hands on some potassium sources other than potassium chloride to try on a trial basis on your own farm. If you'd like some more info on why it is that I would suggest that, I recommend you start out by reading Neil Kinsey's book called Hands-On Agronomy, and that you also read an article published in 2013 by Kahn, Mulvaney, and Ellsworth from the University of Illinois called The Potassium Paradox. In fact, the chances are good that I'm going to be discussing that Potassium Paradox article in an upcoming episode, but even with that said, I'd still encourage you to check it out in the meantime. At the end of the day, this was an excellent and thought-provoking study, and I hope that it challenges the status quo on your farm and encourages you to try something new on a small plot and to think outside the box. If you'd like to discuss the research study highlighted in this episode, or if you just want to talk agronomy, please feel free to give me a call at 641-919-5574. That's going to do it for this episode of Ag Talk with the Ag Doc. I'm your host, Dr. Curtis Livesey, saying thanks so much for tuning into the podcast. Remember that the podcast is moving to a new hosting site, so stay tuned for directions on how to find us in the upcoming episodes. Make sure to follow Dynamite Ag on Facebook and Twitter, and to connect with us on AgFuse. And if you have feedback on this episode or on the podcast in general, or if you just want to talk agronomy, please go over to dynamiteag.com. That's a wrap for the show, guys. Thanks so much for tuning in.